Hey, it's Antoinette, and welcome to another episode of the Hormone Heartbeat podcast. In today's episode, I'll be interviewing Kaylee Crouch, a family nurse practitioner who's doing telemedicine and works locally in Texas. She'll be sharing with us some of the approaches to PCOS management in Western medicine, as well as discussing her experience and both personally and clinically with the management of PCOS in a more holistic and functional medicine approach.
Welcome to the Hormone Heartbeat Podcast, a podcast about female empowerment through menstrual cycle health, the true heartbeat of your hormone status. With each episode, we'll explore the foundations of hormone health with science, soulful and heartfelt conversations, a dash of sass and feminine pizzazz. Our dream is to arm you with exactly what you need to be an unstoppable female force, ready to achieve all that your heart desires and embrace your inner goddess. And here's your host, naturopathic doctor, birth doula, fertility awareness educator, hormone enthusiast, and lover of pretty things, Antoinette Falco.
Today's episode of the Hormone Heartbeat podcast is sponsored by my post-pill guidebook. If you are currently on hormonal contraceptive and looking to transition off but aren't sure where to begin, how to start, what to do, I invite you to download my post-pill guidebook, and you can follow the link in the show notes below. Welcome, Kaylee. It's so wonderful to have you on today's episode. Thank you so much for being here.
Well, thanks for having me.
All right. So let's start the episode with having you share a little bit about your story and what led you to doing the work that you do.
So I am a family nurse practitioner, and I have been for about 3 years. And I enjoyed working with women that had conditions like PCOS, but it wasn't something that was very easy to do in a primary care setting. So I created this program. But what really led to all of that was I was diagnosed with PCOS, or polycystic ovarian syndrome, about 10 years after my first period, and probably about 13 years after puberty. So I considered PCOS as being a cause for a lot of the problems I was having about 5 years before I got diagnosed, but kind of got ignored because I was thin, because at that time they typically saw a patient who had PCOS as someone who was overweight, and they didn't look at thin people for that at all. So I was kind of on my own trying to figure things out, and I tried all the things diet-wise. Primarily, I've tried the keto and the low carb, and I just didn't find that they were very sustainable, and problems with blood sugar ended up worse after you came off of the diet and started to eat carbohydrates again. So ended up worse in the long run, and I knew I had to find a better way. So I did lots of research, made a lot of changes, and here I am. Felt the need to share what I'd learned with other women that are struggling too.
Yes. And we will dive into all of those little details in this episode, but I couldn't agree with you more that I think primary care, we're definitely seeing gaps when it comes to the treatment, even I would say the diagnosis of PCOS. So I'd love for you to tell us a bit more about that. So for our listeners who may not be familiar, nurse practitioners work in primary care clinics, and their scope of practice includes being able to diagnose, run lab testing, and of course, prescribe certain medications. So, Kaylee, if you could share with us a bit about PCOS and maybe how it presents clinically. You mentioned your situation about being, you know, lower body weight and having PCOS. Can you give us like kind of a more general picture of what the symptoms look like of PCOS and then what diagnosing PCOS looks like?
Yeah. So polycystic ovarian syndrome is kind of a confusing name for that condition, because you don't actually have to have polycystic ovaries to have it. For a long time, they viewed it as a gynecologic problem, or just a women's problem that had to do with just your ovaries. And I think a lot of providers still see it that way, but it is accepted now as an endocrine disorder. So kind of in the same class as diabetes or thyroid disorders. It is complicated and messy and really unique to each individual who has it. And there are some similarities, but truthfully, it can present in so many different ways. The diagnostic criteria these days is the Rotterdam criteria. So you have to have 2 out of 3 symptoms to be diagnosed with polycystic ovaries, or polycystic ovary syndrome. And those symptoms are you don't ovulate or you don't ovulate very often. You have elevated testosterone levels or symptoms that would make you think that you do, like cystic acne or hirsutism, which is hair growth where you don't think it should be, typically male pattern, and or polycystic ovaries. So women typically present, either they come in and maybe they only have a period every 3 months or every 3 years sometimes. It is possible to get a monthly period without ovulation. So it does happen, but most of the time women are skipping periods. Sometimes women come in because they all of a sudden start gaining a lot of weight. Their blood sugars are out of control. They have hair loss from where it should be, hair growth where it shouldn't be, worsening acne. And some women may seem to be perfectly healthy and not, they don't know that anything is wrong until they are having trouble getting pregnant.
Yes, that is certainly something that I see in my practice where it's like, the young girl presented with some of those symptoms maybe at 16 and then, you know, she was put on hormonal birth control and that completely suppressed everything. And then when it came to coming off to try and conceive, it's like she didn't even know that back then she had that diagnosis. That, in my opinion, actually is, it's alarming, right? It's like we're suppressing female hormones and to a point where women have no idea what's going on in their bodies over, you know, for some, it can be like 10, 15 years even, which is a long time.
Yeah. And it just covers everything up. So you have no idea there's a problem.
So, you know, one of my questions is in Western medicine or primary care, the approach to treating PCOS is primarily hormonal contraceptive. Can you give us a little bit of insight, maybe why that's the drug of choice? Are there any alternative options?
So truthfully, the first line treatment for PCOS is lifestyle modification, but it is really hard to address that in primary care because the truth of the matter is most providers anymore work for big companies who say you're going to see this many patients every day and you get 15, maybe 20 minutes with the provider. And that's just not long enough. And I think that a lot of primary care providers don't really delve into what polycystic ovarian syndrome is. And they get told in school, you know, give them birth control, it'll fix all these problems. And so that's the easy fix. And then when you come off and you can't have kids, they just ship you off to a specialist. So it's not their problem anymore. Birth control was something that I was treated with. It was really frustrating for me because it didn't really work as well as it should have. Like I spotted it all the time. And then when I came off of birth control, it was awful. Like there are women who go on birth control and they do fine and they come off of their birth control and everything goes back to normal and they have kids and it's all sunshine and rainbows. And when I came off of birth control, my hormones had been suppressed to the point that they didn't kick back in. So I went into straight up menopause, hot flashes, mood swings, all the good things.
Wow.
So I feel like there's a lot of things, if I had never been put on birth control, that may have been addressed in a way that I wouldn't have had to experience that. But I often joke that my husband and I will be good for the long haul because we've already been through menopause once. But hormonal contraceptives, they don't fix the problem. They just cover it up. So your period starts showing up regularly. It might help with the acne or the hair growth or the hair loss. But as soon as you come off, all of the problems come back.
Yeah, it's not the long-term solution.
Yeah, certainly not if you want to have kids. Like, yeah, it's not going to work out.
I always say it's more of the Band-Aid, right? Yes, it's going to, yes, air quote, it's going to seem that things are fixed. And I very much hate the word fixed in medicine, but you know what I mean, right? It's yeah, going to suppress, it suppresses hormones. So it suppresses those, you know, those androgens, for example, that are the reason why you have worsening acne, but we're never actually tackling, well, why are those androgens high? How can we support our lifestyle to address those? So I love that you remind us that first line treatment is diet and lifestyle, because it just puts another, you know, it puts it in our mind. Okay, well, why aren't we having these conversations with our doctors? And I would imagine another problematic area is time, right? It takes time to discuss lifestyle modifications. And in a primary care model, you know, it's the 5 to 10 minute appointment, in and out. There isn't the time to talk about things like diet.
Yeah, there's definitely not enough time.
Okay, so you had talked about the various symptoms that can happen with PCOS. I've often heard it be, you know, PCOS be put into categories. From your perspective, are there specific types of PCOS? And do you see, like, when you're helping with treatment, does it matter to put people in a specific type?
So for me, I don't use the distinctions for types because they're all just really interconnected and they can shift a lot over time. So you might start with one type and it turns into another. Mm-hmm. If you Google it, the types that most of the time you're going to find are insulin resistant, inflammatory, adrenal, or post pill. Mm-hmm. Most women who have PCOS have some level of insulin resistance, and that just means that your body can't use the sugar that you eat the way that it should. And then it makes you crave more sugar, which just doesn't help anything. It doesn't help your blood sugar control. It doesn't help with inflammation. It doesn't help with acne. But it's just, it's a big circle. So like from the insulin resistance perspective, if you're insulin resistant, your body doesn't use the sugar you consume like it should. So it floats around in your bloodstream. Your blood sugar is too high. The cells in your body can't use it. So they're hungry all the time. They crave more and more sugar. And then that blood sugar being too high promotes inflammation in your body. And it's also a stressor. So it raises your stress hormone cortisol, which raises your insulin level and your testosterone level, which causes you to put weight on in your midsection, have increased acne, have that hair loss and those hair growth problems, and have period irregularities. So any of the initial types of PCOS can easily and often do morph into another type. So even if you came in and I said, oh, you have adrenal PCOS, within a few months, if you haven't made some pretty big changes, you're adrenal and insulin resistant now. Mm-hmm. And then post-pill, I mean, that's, I don't think that the pill causes PCOS. It just covers it up. And then you come off of the pill and you find out that you've had it. And you've just been covering it up the whole time.
Mm-hmm. Or it leads to, you know, more inflammation.
Yeah.
And so then you, yeah. No, I love that you put it that way, because I agree. Like in practice, I've definitely seen that very rarely am I putting people in like specific types. It's kind of like they're all, everyone's got a little bit of everything going on. Yeah. And yeah, I love the point where if you don't address it, well, then you kind of make the situation worse with, you know, more hormone imbalances.
It's just all a big circle, an endless circle.
Mm-hmm. And PCOS can also affect other, so you had mentioned about the adrenals, but are there other organ systems that, you know, you have found that are also become affected? An example I think of is thyroid. If you could speak to that or maybe some other connection.
So there's a lot of research coming out just within the past few years where they have started looking at women who have PCOS and hypothyroidism. So it's really common for your thyroid to not be functioning as well as it should when you have PCOS. And they have found that women who have PCOS have an increased rate of thyroid antibodies. So it's an autoimmune condition where your body's attacking your thyroid so it doesn't work the way that it should. The thyroid is your master gland. So it controls like everything hormone-wise. It does all the things. And when it isn't functioning properly, it can lead to a number of the symptoms of PCOS. So in some ways, I think that that causes problems when it comes to getting your diagnosis, because a lot of times the doctor does check your thyroid. And if it comes back low, then they blame everything on your thyroid and they throw PCOS out the window and they just don't even think about it again. But the thyroid just, it really helps regulate everything, but it can't fix it all by itself. And one of the big ways that the thyroid really helps with PCOS is it indirectly helps the body to make sex hormone binding globulins. So that is this little doohickey that's floating around in your body, and it attaches onto your excess hormones like estrogen and testosterone so that they're not active in the body and they're not causing these symptoms like hair growth or a lack of ovulation. So you don't want those hormones to be floating around your body without boundaries. So treating thyroid condition can clear up a lot of those PCOS symptoms, but doesn't typically get rid of all of them. And then the adrenals also play a big role with PCOS. So they are typically responsible for elevated testosterone levels that women experience. And they also can lead to elevated cortisol levels. So all of that leads to inflammation, higher blood sugar levels, the belly fat, acne. It just all is tied together.
Yeah. So I'm just thinking about our listeners, and they may be thinking that they have PCOS based on some of the symptoms. And, you know, maybe they're wondering about their thyroid or adrenals as well. If you were to give your most comprehensive list of tests that you think a woman with PCOS should advocate for herself or ask her doctor for, what would that be?
Well, there's a lot of variation depending on who you see. Definitely get your thyroid checked and your testosterone level. It's ideal if you can get your free and your total testosterone levels checked. And that is something that if your testosterone level isn't high, that doesn't mean you don't have PCOS. So don't think of it as, you know, the end all be all of whether or not you get this diagnosis, even though you may see a provider that, you know, throws the diagnosis out of the window if that doesn't come back high. There are some tests that you can have done to be sure that you don't have anything bad wrong with your adrenals. So there's a whole gamut of tests you can have done and should have done. So it's really just a matter of finding somebody who knows enough about the diagnosis to get you all of the right tests. I mean, the list is pretty extensive to get everything you need done.
Well, I think you brought up a good point about just because, you know, for example, a test like testosterone comes back negative. If you're showing all the symptoms of high androgens, well, it could be the many other androgens that maybe you have
right
high. And, you know, did we necessarily test them? No, we didn't. So well, that could be an example.
I think that primary care providers look at those criteria and they say, oh, your testosterone level isn't high, but they're not looking at the entire criteria. The criteria is either your testosterone level is high or you have symptoms that are mm-hmm. consistent with that level being high, regardless of mm-hmm. whether or not it's high. So if you're having hair growth, you know, on your chin and your upper lip and your lower abdomen and your chest, if your testosterone level isn't high, I don't really care. You have the symptoms mm-hmm. that point towards PCOS.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, it goes to the other point about just because a lab test is showing normal doesn't mean you don't have a, you know, what they call like a sublaboratory, meaning you still have symptoms. Right. And I know this happens quite a bit with thyroid, right? Like we have optimal ranges when it comes to thyroid, but, you know, we're not seeing in medicine, like it's, I think the TSH range, for example, is like really high, which most labs consider normal, but a lot of women don't feel good when they have TSHs of 3, you know, even though that falls within the range. So yeah, I love that you highlighted that. Okay. So now let's jump into some of those nitty gritties that you talked about regarding treatment, because, you know, it's everywhere, you know, change your diet. This diet is good for PCOS. This diet is good for PCOS, you know, food and nutrition. Those are essential for many conditions as like the starting point, but we're talking about PCOS. So can you share like some of your, I don't want to ask you what's the best diet, 'cause I know that that doesn't exist, but what's your top 3 pieces of nutritional advice that you think every woman with PCOS should strongly consider?
So I typically recommend, I don't recommend a whole lot of like adaptogenic herbs or anything like that. They're out there. You can find a lot of research that will tell you, oh, take this herb and, you know, it'll fix all of your problems. And we all want a quick fix. There's just not one. So the 3 supplements that I do recommend for women with PCOS and everyone with PCOS are vitamin D, magnesium, and inositol, which I prefer the brand Ovositol just because it has the right combination of types of what you would naturally see in your body. And it seems to work pretty well for most patients. And then I typically recommend that women with PCOS try to lean towards a more whole foods diet. So eliminating a lot of the processed foods that are really common in Western diets. Some people do really well on a whole food plant-based diet, but I live in Texas and I am going to eat meat. So I eat less than I used to. And I typically recommend that women, especially in this area, do cut back. I have heard women that say, you know, I did a vegan diet and it was awful and they gained weight and nothing worked and all this stuff. But most of the time, if you ask those women, you can have a vegan diet and still have an unhealthy diet. It's very easy.
Definitely.
So, you know, people think, oh, I'll go vegan and it'll fix my problems. And it's not that simple. You have to be eating real food. And my absolute most important recommendation that I make to everyone that everyone acts like I'm crazy about is you need more fiber. The average American gets about 10 to 12 grams of fiber a day. And the recommended intake is like 25 to 30 grams a day. And fiber is just, it's this amazing thing that helps keep your intestinal microbiome healthy and happy. And it helps rid your body of toxins. So people start looking at, they need to eliminate environmental toxins. You can do a lot for yourself if you just drink plenty of water and eat fiber. It also helps get rid of excess estrogen and testosterone. So it helps keep your hormones balanced when you're eating enough fiber. So I typically recommend people get at least 30 grams of fiber a day, but you want to work up to that if you're not getting very much or you're going to be pretty gassy and miserable.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it's fairly easy to get a decent amount of fiber. Like that's where the recommendation is, you know, eat more fruits and vegetables because fruits and vegetables contain like a good amount of fiber.
Yeah. But and you're going to have less trouble. Like a lot of women with PCOS won't eat fruit. They're very, you know, it has sugar in it. Sugar, I should eat fruit. And the truth is you should eat fruit because it's full of antioxidants, but it's a natural sugar that is combined with fiber. So the fiber helps your body to use that sugar more appropriately. It doesn't get released into the body as fast. So you don't have those highs and lows like what you would from a chocolate bar. The easiest way to get more fiber into your body and the cheapest way is with beans. And everyone, like, they don't like it when you tell them to eat beans. And I'm like, why is this hard? They're cheap and they're little powerhouses. They're full of protein and fiber. Beans and greens. That's all you need.
Beans and greens. You heard it, folks. I know, you know, because I'm constantly, a lot of what I do in my practice is I am looking for food sensitivities because I think we just live in a world where food sensitivities are everywhere. And for many people, you know, their guts aren't able to handle beans at the beginning, but usually with a little bit of gut work, they are able to incorporate those in gradually. But yeah, I think this speaks to the point that we were talking about before we actually recorded this episode. And that's like, there really is no like perfect diet that's going to be, it's going to work for every single person.
You have to meet people where they are too, because I can't take you, if you're eating nothing but processed foods and takeout, then it is going to be beneficial for you to come and see me. And I give you this list of, you know, all these meals that you have to cook yourself and you're not typically cooking. And, you know, it's just, it's so much, it's too much all at once. You've got to make little changes to move towards your goal. It can't be all at once. And it's not all or nothing. You're not a failure if things don't go the way you want them to.
Yeah, that's a whole other, that's a whole other point in itself. You know, I think a lot of women are guilty of, you know, the all or nothing mentality, especially when it comes to diet changes or health changes. You know, even to your example, like I did want to touch back to when you're talking about plant-based and the vegan diet. I think a vegan diet works very well for like resets, you know, like you have, haven't been eating very well or you want to like shift things. And so you might do, you know, like maybe a 4 to 6 week vegan reset or kind of cleanse, like however you want to look at it. But then like, I think there is something to say that we women, we need animal proteins in order to produce our hormones, in order to have healthy menstrual cycles. Like, that is important. So I think like a long-term vegan diet can be harmful. And, but I think the principles, and I think eating good quality fruits and vegetables is going to have tremendous benefit. But I think to say no to all animal products is probably going to do more harm than good long-term.
Well, and you can find a lot of people out there to speak to that, that went vegan for an extended period of time and they did great in the beginning, but then it didn't work out in the long term. They started having problems because they were just missing what they need, and what they need, they can get from animal proteins. And there's a lot of things that a lot of vegans or vegetarians will tell you that you can get from plants. But the truth of the matter is, a lot of those things aren't as easily absorbed from plant-based sources. You know, they're a lot easier for your body to use if you get them from animal proteins.
Mm-hmm. And you usually need to have like quite a diverse profile to even equate to a small part that you can actually get from animal products.
Yeah.
So again, to recap, we are not saying that the vegan diet is bad or plant-based is bad. We are saying that we like the principles and we like a diet full of lots of healthy fruits and vegetables, but we also need animal proteins.
Yes.
Great. I knew I just didn't want to get any of the naysayers saying that we were bashing.
Amen.
Okay, great. So your recommendations, like the vitamin D and magnesium, like, isn't it amazing how much of a powerhouse magnesium is? Like, what does magnesium not do?
And women are so often low in it. And that's something I didn't realize when I was just a brand new nurse. We had a doctor that came in that he had more of a holistic approach, and he checked everyone's magnesium levels. And it was just amazing to me. Almost every woman he checked them on, they were low. And magnesium does so many good things. It helps control your blood pressure. It helps regulate your guts. It helps relax you. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah. I just always think back to school and, you know, all those really complicated diagrams and of like all the cofactors, and this goes to make this and then goes to make this. You almost always saw magnesium as like the little like arrow into the equation. So that just shows you that so many processes that happen in our body need magnesium. So to be deficient, like, think how many functions are not working optimally.
Yeah, absolutely. I love it. I just love magnesium.
Magnesium is sometimes my excuse to eat chocolate. I'm like, well, there's a decent amount of magnesium in some, you know, dark chocolate. So I don't have to be guilty if it's day one of my period and that's what I want to have. Like, my body needs it. My uterus needs this chocolate. Okay. Now moving on to some of the lifestyle modifications that women with PCOS can make.
So this is also one of those things that is very specific to each person. So exercise needs to be a big part of any woman's lifestyle, but especially women with PCOS. But I don't think you should go crazy with exercise. And I do think that this can be a problem for women, especially women who are struggling with their weight and have PCOS. There's a lot of information out there that'll push you to do HIIT with high intensity interval training. People start deciding they're going to train for a marathon or a half marathon. And sometimes these things can do more harm than good, because, you know, we talked about the adrenals and how they affect PCOS and those kinds of exercises. So moderate exercise like jogging for long periods of time or high intensity exercise for short periods of time can increase your stress hormones, which also increase your testosterone levels. So you can cause yourself more harm than good. But that being said, there are some studies out there where they took women with PCOS and they gave them an exercise program to see how everyone did. And I typically recommend off of that 30 to 40 minutes of moderate intensity exercise 4 to 5 days a week. But that being said, don't go all out. If you're not exercising at all right now, don't go straight to 30 to 40 minutes, do 10 minutes. And it doesn't have to all be at once either. You can split your time up, take a 10 minute walk, you know, twice a day, you know, while you take your break at work. And it doesn't have to be traditional exercise either. Find something that you like to do. Ride a bike, roller skate, take a pole dancing class. If you find yourself really sensitive to stress, I cannot push you hard enough towards yoga, but just know that sometimes it can be a little woo-woo, you know? So don't think because you have tried yoga once that you hate it, because you may find another instructor that you like that is not very woo-woo. But the truth of the matter is you just need to move more. It needs to be part of your everyday. And I think that women often think of exercise as nothing but cardio. So I encourage you to consider weight training as part of your exercise program, because weight training helps your cells to use sugar more efficiently. So it will help your blood sugar to be better controlled, and it just helps your metabolism to work better. So I do recommend you work some weight training in there. But if you're just starting out, just try to find something you enjoy and make a little bit of time for it every day. And as that gets easier, start increasing how long you're doing it.
Mm-hmm. All great points. And I definitely agree with you on the, sometimes we overdo it when it comes to exercise, or, you know, as women, we compare ourselves to male counterparts and we expect that our bodies are just going to be able to do these 30-minute HIIT workouts 5 to 7 days a week. And that's, you know, that's not realistic. And, you know, hormonally, it also doesn't align. I know I've been testing this for myself for a number of months now. Like I used to be a CrossFitter, and I was so unhappy with my body. And I always go back to, like, it was the stress piece. Like, I was working my body too intensely. I was doing too intense workouts, and I really learned my lesson. I was like, that's not the type of exercise that my body needs. So then when I started to do more of, like, cycle syncing exercises, you know, that's where, like, each phase of your cycle, you kind of take advantage of what's going on hormonally. I found that that made a huge difference. And I notice if I'm, you know, you mentioned yoga, if I don't do yoga during menstruation, then I try and do something like a weight training exercise or something, I'm way more uncomfortable, and I can't get through those, you know, those days of my period. So I wish more women knew this. And I think that it can be empowering to know that you're doing the right workout for your body.
I like doing your exercise based on where you're at in your cycle. It's just really hard for women with PCOS to do that, because most of the time you don't have a clue where you're at in your cycle.
True. That's a good point. Cause is there anything to say about, you know, how exercise can help regulate the cycle and put women with PCOS in a regulating pattern?
So, I mean, exercise, it can help you lose weight. But that being said, even if you start exercising and you lose no weight at all, they found this in people with PCOS. They've found it in people with diabetes, heart disease, high blood pressure. Even if you lose 0 pounds, you will see an improvement in how your body is functioning. So if your body is using sugar more efficiently, then it is going to help your hormones to be more balanced. It's going to help your periods to come more regularly. It's just going to make everything work better. So I think a lot of women get discouraged when they start an exercise program and they don't lose weight. So they quit, because why are they wasting their time? But I think you should look at exercise. The goal is not to lose weight. The goal is to help your body to function more appropriately. And when you move more, and especially when you do that weight training, it just helps things to function more appropriately. And I mean, when you move more, it also helps your guts to move more. And we all know how I feel about your guts. If they're working right, then your hormones are going to be more balanced, because you're not holding on to toxins.
Mm-hmm. It's a very encouraging point and good reminder for women that just because you don't see, like, the weight change doesn't mean you're not doing something really good for your body. And, you know, that insulin resistance piece is so huge, and exercise helps to lower your insulin resistance. And then, you know, that has an effect on ovulation, and then Well, we all know if you ovulate your cycles, it helps. It's one step closer to getting you to have regular cycles.
Right.
Okay. Now the next topic that I want to talk about is fertility and PCOS. So this can be, I don't know how many times I've heard women who are like, oh no, I have PCOS. I like can't get pregnant. It's almost like it's becomes part of the diagnosis for some women, or they like identify and they hold on to that aspect of it. Can you explain a bit about this connection and, you know, what you would say to women who maybe have this thought, or women who maybe were just very recently diagnosed and their head's spinning because they're worried and anxious and stressed and overwhelmed about what this could mean about for them to plan their family?
Yeah. So I think infertility, that's just the most disheartening part of PCOS, and it is more difficult. And the reason it is more difficult is because your ovulation is just kind of all over the place. Some women don't ovulate at all. And, you know, we talked about earlier, you can have periods and not ovulate. So you may think that everything is working fine and you never ovulate. But for most women, they're skipping periods. They can go months or years between periods. And what typically happens is your estrogen level stays high all of the time, and your body is just constantly getting these little follicles inside your ovaries ready to become eggs and then become babies. And the hormones just don't work right. So they never release. They're not in the right place. So you can have all the sex in the world and it is never going to make it to that egg because it never leaves your ovary. And those hormones are just off balance. Your estrogen continues to rise. And while your body's making all these follicles that never get released, the lining of your uterus also just continues to thicken. So even if an egg does eventually get released, depending on the lining of your uterus, it's not a very good place for that egg to make a home because it doesn't get the blood supply that it needs. So women with PCOS do tend to have a higher risk of miscarriage. Now, that being said, there's a lot that you can do that you have a lot of control over to help your fertility. So you can find a million books out there that will tell you what fertility diet you should be on. And they all have a lot in common, and almost all of them tell you to minimize processed foods and focus on whole foods. Sorry, all you book writers out there, because that's what almost all of them say.
And it can be simple, right? Sometimes yeah, I think we overcomplicate things.
Yeah, it's not hard. You need to go back to, you know, back in the day, people didn't eat processed foods because they weren't readily available. And even if they were, like, they were either expensive or, you know, people lived on farms and they didn't go to town all the time and get food. They grew their own food and they cooked their own food in their kitchens. And we just need to go back to eating real food. And I think that is the most important piece. You can exercise, you can control your stress, you can do all these things. And yes, they do help, but truthfully, your diet, I think, is the most important piece when it comes to your fertility.
Mm-hmm, definitely. So you had mentioned about that lining piece. Do you know anything about progesterone and women who have PCOS? Like, is that something that can help prevent their risk of miscarriage?
It kind of depends. A lot of women with PCOS have a hard time with their progesterone levels. And that's because your estrogen level is so high all the time. And that, so during your cycle, once that egg is released and it goes to your uterus, it starts making progesterone. It makes a corpus luteum. It makes progesterone and all this good stuff. If it doesn't get fertilized, you have a period. If it does get fertilized, you keep making more progesterone. If that never happens, then you don't ever get that boost in progesterone that you're supposed to have. So you don't have that cycle. It doesn't happen the way that it's supposed to. But a lot of women, even when they do release an egg, they still don't have progesterone levels where they should be, or they're kind of all over the place in that stage of your cycle. There is one tool that I really like, and they're not paying me to say this or anything, but there is a fertility monitor that you can get. It monitors your, not necessarily your progesterone levels, but it monitors your basal body temperature, but it goes in the vagina, so it can't be altered by how cold it is in your room, and you don't have to worry about whether or not you took your temperature at the exact same time, and you don't have to lay in bed and wait until your temperature's done, because it takes your temperature throughout your entire sleeping period and gives you an average. And you can see if you had that ovulation, and you can see how your progesterone does afterwards based on how steady your temperature is. And that is OviSense. I love OviSense. I think it's great. You should see this big temperature rise, and then it should stay high until your period comes. But sometimes women will find that they're just all over the place and they never ovulate, and then they have a period. Or they have the little boost, but then their progesterone just tanks after they've ovulated. And that will make it to where an egg just can't make a home in your uterus too. It can't, it just doesn't have, that progesterone is what helps stabilize everything so that it's a nice friendly home for your egg to make a baby in.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that you talked about fertility awareness method. That's like definitely a tool that I use in my practice quite a bit. And temperature, BBT temperature, or, you know, like vaginal temperature, you can, I mean, I think OviSense is such a cool device, but you can even do that with a thermometer. You know, you can check your vaginal temperature. But yeah, I think tracking your BBT is so valuable for women with PCOS because it can help confirm confirm that ovulation happened when you're not sure. And then also it can give us some information of like, yeah, how long is your luteal phase? How those temperatures as they go up and down, you know, that could be a sign that you don't have enough progesterone, because we want to see the temperatures elevated in the second half and stay elevated. So yeah, that's a good, thanks for sharing that. I know me personally, I've been using the temp drop and I quite like it because I sometimes don't get a very consistent sleep, and I like that it can take out those outliers pretty easily.
Yeah. Yeah. I just like, I like any of the wearable devices.
Yeah.
Just simply because, like, you know, if you wake up late, you're like, well, I have to take my temperature. And some of those thermometers, those basal body thermometers that you do like an oral temperature with, take for freaking ever. So you're just laying there like, how much longer is this going to take? I really need to get dressed for work. Like,
yeah, the research about it is 10 minutes. So that's a significant amount of time. And I definitely have had patients who, you know, they're like, this is not for me. Or if you're, a postpartum mom, you know, and you're like, I have to attend to a baby. I can't lie in my bed for 10 minutes.
It'll be okay, baby. I'll be there eventually.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, for a lot of women, like learning how to identify those outliers, and, you know, it is definitely the more cost-effective approach. Some of those femtech devices can get quite expensive.
Well, and you can learn a lot about your cycle from temping too. That doesn't necessarily mean you have to always temp. So you may be able to see like how your cervical mucus changes around ovulation. So you learn what signs to look for, and you don't necessarily have to take your temperature anymore because you know your body better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. Okay. So now I would love for you to share a bit about the program that you created for women with PCOS that you had talked about at the beginning of our episode. Tell us what it's about, who's the right person for it, and how people can find out more.
So I have an 8-week program. It's a PCOS lifestyle program. So a big piece of it is diet, but we also look at stress and exercise and non-food rewards and things like that. And it's just, it's a way for you to get some guidance. So there is homework involved, which, I mean, we all love homework, but that way I can see where you're at right now and help you get closer to the goal of where you want to be. It's not an overnight thing. It doesn't fix you in 8 weeks. It just helps you get those lifestyle habits set so that you're on the right track. You can find more at my website, which is calliecrouch.com. That's CalliecrouchCom. And you can also email me directly at support@calliecrouch.com. I also have a Facebook group, PCOS, Sexy, Beautiful, and in Control. I don't work with just anyone, so I like to have an opportunity to get on a phone call, see if we're a good fit, kind of see where you're at. It's a lot of work to reset your lifestyle. So I want to be sure that anyone who signs up for the program is really motivated to do the work, to get the feedback, and to make the changes, because I don't want you wasting your time or money. And the truth of the matter is not everyone's ready right now, and that's fine. It's a hard condition to have. It can be really overwhelming, and sometimes you're just not ready to tackle it yet, and that's okay. But just start thinking about it. Start putting those thoughts in your mind so you can start making changes, because the earlier you do, the easier it's going to be.
Excellent. Well, we'll put all of that in the show notes. And thank you, Callie, so much for today's interview. I look forward to sharing this with all the listeners. And thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Hormone Heartbeat podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe so you can be notified of all future episodes. And don't forget to check out the show notes for all guest details and your free downloadable goodies. Your feedback is important to me, so please, please leave a review so women can find and be empowered by this knowledge. If you have a topic you'd like to see discussed on the show or have a recommendation for guests you'd like to see interviewed, please get in touch by emailing thehormoneheartbeatpodcast@gmail.com.